My name is Sudeshaw Zwani. Currently, I work as the financial analyst on this Teacher of Writing and Bitcoin project. Prior to working here, my experience spanned from the private sector, working for commercial banks, mainly three commercial banks in Liberia. That is LBDI as the financial analyst, treasury managers for Guaranty Trust Bank, and then IB as chief accountant. In terms of education, I was partly schooled in Liberia and partly schooled in England. So I earned a Master's of Science degree in accounting from University of the Henley Business School, University of Reading. I also earned a Master's of Business Administration, MBA in Finance. A part-time lecturer at the various universities. Just a summary.
So, how did you first learn about this project? How did you become aware of it?
There is a public website and the executive mentions that vacancies have been published. So, based on that, I became enthusiastic in applying for this job, and it was a merit-based recruitment process that went on. So, I applied, went through the interview, went through a rating test, and then at the end of the day, a background check was done, and we became successful.
Okay. So the executive management website is basically where all, how would you say, NGO or government jobs, all of them are published. So it's basically like Liberia's main job website. Yeah.
Oh, so even if it has nothing to do with the government?
Yes, people publish that. The process started the earlier part of 2016. And then I became hired in the middle of the year.
Yeah.
June 1st.
Right. So, going back to that, to June 1st then, how would you describe your responsibilities and what some of those the initial challenges were that you had?
My terms of reference were clear. As the financial analyst, managing the finance, you must have a prerequisite skills like what I listed.
Mm-hmm.
And being the first public sector that I've ever worked in my life, because it became a bit challenging because the way of doing things were kind of different. But borrowing from experience, from interacting or in the private sector, really helped to enhance that. And then also meeting supervisors like David, who is the project manager, and other people, Minister Wanda, who have, it actually gave me a boost in terms of implementing and in terms of efficiency and what have you.
So we understand that one of the first things that actually happened was this audit, this external audit from PwC. Were you involved with that?
Yes. When I got in, the technical audit was review process, but it was actually meant for the vetting exercise to know exactly what the payrolls were, what are the process of people getting on payroll, that could be the numbers of teachers, just to establish the technical base. It was nothing relating to the finance. We got involved, and then we had to set up the financial system as part of my responsibility and be able to come up with a complete system and control procedures in the review. So that was done in June. And then in July, when we start to receive tranches of disbursement from a donor, which is Bitcoin, we already had a system in place to be able to check in terms of order rationale, control environment.
So you said the money came in tranches?
Yeah. The budget is carved in tranches on a quarterly basis.
Quarterly tranches.
With indicators of milestones.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was going to ask. So like when you say the word like milestones, and the tranches were conditional?
Yeah, reports submitted at the end of the quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Review is done by both the donors. That is,
and who submits this report?
We submit report to Bitcoin.
Okay.
and Bitcoin reveals them, mm-hmm. and then do it after, we can now request a second trend. And then after the second trend was an audit, a review by PwC to validate the two quarters. So PwC has two audits, mid audit and final audit.
I see.
So they did the mid audit, and then based on the mid audit, can now request the test quarter trench. No, it was done when I came in.
When you here, okay. Yeah. So that was for the vetting process.
Yes, vetting, the biometric process.
So they basically wanted to see, I guess, if the plan was realistic.
Yeah.
Is that right?
That's what we refer to as a baseline audit.
Okay. And can you remember one or two maybe issues or specific things that came up during that auditing process that maybe you changed or adapted a bit?
Technically, it was the baseline. So the baseline would have, now initially when you carve in an investment memo, you will have say, okay, Leon is to do this, do this, do that, based on concept. So when you set up the baseline tend to give you the reality of what it is like.
Right.
So you could say you have 20,000 teachers on payroll and the process of CSA, this, and so the baseline audit was meant to establish what is the current process in place in terms of how many teachers were on payroll. So that was established. And based on the baseline audit, the final budget was adjusted and submitted for approval.
So that baseline audit would have just used the numbers from the CSA payroll. And
yes,
from the ministry.
CSA payroll processes involving people getting on payroll, Ministry of Finance payment mode. I mean, some of the constraints, the challenges, and what have you.
Okay.
Just for the baseline of it.
Right. Did you have to hire a lot of people after you joined, or was the whole team basically in place by the time that you joined?
I'm aware that the project manager was hired.
Mm-hmm.
I was second to the project manager, and then the rest of the team, that is the administrative person, the field supervisors, came in later,
yeah.
The two people you talked to. So we didn't have to hire a lot of people.
You did not have to hire?
No.
So roughly, how big is the staff contingent?
In the project size?
Yeah.
The PIU is about four people.
PIU, Program Implementation Unit.
The Project Implementation Unit.
That's the official name for this team?
No.
And then you mentioned like the field supervisors. Do they report to you as well? How many of them?
They report one person.
One person.
You spoke with him already.
Oh.
On the first day.
Vicky is here now, but I understand that they are currently in two counties still,
yeah.
Finalizing the process. So I guess that means that there must be more people out in the county.
The project used the ministry co-staffs. That is the HR team and the teacher testing team. Who are in the ministry, employed by the ministry on government payrolls. The testing team and the vetting team is comprised of the HR staff,
yes.
Who might be open with the process. And there were additional orientations done by the project manager and other people,
mm-hmm.
to show how they go about with the vetting exercise.
Right, so some training coming from this unit,
basically. Yes, yes, often. We do that often before the team even gets to the field. When they return, then they'll build on the challenges and the experience they got as well.
Okay. So the bulk of the question, obviously, is how does this actually work in practice? So we've heard from a lot of people already their view as to how, you know, what actually happens in the field. But it's always useful to ask different people because you might remember something that they forgot. So just generally speaking, how does it work when you decide, okay, we're going to this county? What's the first step and how does that process then play out?
In terms of being in the county,
yeah.
I might not be able to speak to that well.
So you've never actually...
I have been there twice.
Twice?
Yes, but not to go and vet what have you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Most often when the project manager is not around, he asked me to go and see the process for quality assurance for other person. So I might not be able to speak to the processes leading to that,
mm-hmm.
100%. But in terms of what I've gathered, when they turn return in terms of experience and interaction is what I could speak to adequately. So basically it was to prevent, my work is to actually prevent any misuse.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Which I did. So not to go and vet and follow up the process and know exactly what is done. But I may not be able to speak to them.
Okay.
So do you... Oh, sorry.
No, I mean, I just want to ask them. So how do you prevent misuse?
In terms of funds, we have a control process in place.
Okay.
Because the way the budget is cut, so we tend to follow up to make sure that what is being used there. So we have the budget in terms of number of days. The way the budget occurs, there were projections, there were contingency in this budget for this. But when the team is going to field, we tend to review the number of days based on realistic. So we sent, we even tighten some of the targets. So the budget will carve on, say, 70 teachers per day, but then we tend to increase the numbers to at least 80 or 85 teachers per day. So we tend to develop savings from those exercises.
So, like, so you did actually increase that number?
Numbers to them.
Yeah.
To the team going in the field.
Yes.
So we tell you, if the budget was carved on the 70 teachers per day, but then we increase the number to 80 teachers or 85 teachers. In some cases, we say if there's 90 teachers in a particular environment, we say it's for a day. So that alone alluded to savings in terms of efficiency and what have you in terms of use.
Now, what you're talking about...
So, in that case, what happens is that we get the list from the HR director, signed by the ministers in charge of that particular environment. We also get a list from the teacher testing, signed by the minister. And then we develop a spreadsheet as it relates to the number of days in terms of travel days, travel days, and actual work days. So, in Liberia, Saturday is not considered as a work day, but we push to make them work on Saturday. Because we tend to avoid climatical conditions as well. So, some of the environments are very terrible in terms of roads. And that's why I was pushing for you to go out of town and see some of the environments.
Yeah.
So, we push them to get more results in a short period of time. So that spreadsheet is done, and then we develop a policy to save, to keep 20%, so that when our report comes, it's accurate enough. Review, everything is done, the project managers approve, the ministers approve the report, then we tend to raise the balance of the money and pay the back. We pay them the 20%.
Oh.
So we don't give you the full amount. So if you were to receive 100, we gave you 70. And then you go and come back, our report is done, we review the report and everything is satisfied, then we raise the balance of the 30% and pay you that amount.
So this is payments to the field staff. This includes the ministry's HR people, etc. So they, I mean, they obviously get a salary from the ministry, but for their work on this project specifically...
It's actually per diem in DSA, because the ministry does not really own, the government does not honor that.
Yeah.
It's not the one paying that.
That's per diem.
Per diem and lodging.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So, let me just check with you. You do the teacher testing first.
Yeah.
Then you get a list from the minister that says these are all the teachers that did the test.
Okay. So what was done here is that when they go in from here, we give them the list. We get a list from the teachers, the HR, before the test. When they get there, they also get a list from the principals.
Yes.
And then in consultation with the, so the list of the principal is also signed, because when they come back, it's also signed by the principal, signed by the DEO, and then signed by the CEO. Those lists are signed. So it's meant to validate that teachers who are not in that environment may not be on that list, because principals may be the one who knows the teachers well. The DEO might be quite cognizant of few things, but the principals will be the one. So that list is taken there. at the vetting exercise, the test is given first.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to make sure that the test is given. So you must finish the test before moving to the vetting.
And we heard the reason for this is basically so that people don't run away.
Run away.
They get the ID card and then they run
away. So those reasons were established so that we can run away. So those check and balances were put in place when we took over. So we put that in place just to prevent that, and then we make sure that people, because it was a real total challenge in the political situation in our country when we started. There was challenges all over, people protesting that. But we were able to do efficient communications with media, people that would talk shows to show reasons, and then the public took interest. Some of the statements were, why will you give tests to students and you refusing to take tests? So those were the kind of statements that really calmed them down. But there was protests all over in the country.
And we also heard that the president herself actually played a role in saying, this is something that needs to happen. This 70 teachers or 80 teachers at a time, right? The reason I ask is because I guess in the beginning, when you get the HR list, there will probably be more teachers on the list. You know, once they've actually written the test and you've gotten the list from the principals, you may see that maybe there were 20 teachers that were already ghosts, even before you wrote the test.
You wouldn't be able to determine that it's 20 teachers who is ghost until you complete that district or that county.
Okay, I see.
So what is done there is like almost all of the teachers for that district is present.
Yes.
For the vetting. So you finish with school A, you move to school B. This, that, until you reach the maximum number for that day.
Ah, okay.
So we were able to procure lights, sometimes to work late and all.
I see.
So when you get to that stage, say if you took a principal list and finished, you notice that you are already in 85.
Yes.
You know you gotta finish, you have to put extra time and extra hours. And that isn't being paid for at all. So we've been able to push the team to do more. So at the end of the day, the exercise is complete. They tend to feed us with reports through Vicky, to know exactly how many teachers are vetted for the day. But until the exercise ends, then you'll be able to exactly know who's the ghost, who did not appear, and what have you.
Okay.
But what was done was, in the cabin of the padan, we set up a cap. Step the cap up.
Sorry, so in the
cabin of the padan to go in the field, the cap went up. So we can see 90 teachers and we tell you, say no, because you had to do 70 or 80 per day. So it should be 2 days. No, we will push for 1 day.
I see. Okay. And you mentioned the Saturday thing. I thought that's interesting too, because obviously if you do it on Saturday, then kids don't miss out on school.
Yeah, that's one of the challenges. And then we fighting to make sure that this is completed within the time frame before students return to classroom.
So how long in any given district usually would you spend?
It depends on the terrain and environment, because environments are extremely challenging.
Maybe a better question would be, how long would it take generally an individual teacher? I'm thinking in terms of how long would they be out of the classroom? The testing and the vetting are on two separate days.
So,
is that right?
We tend to work on the possibilities of teachers mixing, not mixing in the classroom.
Okay.
So, obviously, that's the reasons why they were on school by school basis. So, if you were doing 5 or 10 school a day, maybe not all of the teachers will come at the same time. Every teacher won't have the same hour. And good enough, we were able to achieve most of these things during the breaks, like the Easter breaks, major holidays, major the programs. Those dates were used to achieve most of these things. So we had Easter break that ran for a month. We had first semester break that ran for almost a month and a break. And then we had Christmas break as well.
Hmm.
So,
teachers show up during the break?
Yes. Yeah, we've been able to get them. Because the system, the thing has been very enthusiastic. We have a clear message. If don't show up, you'll be removed.
Mm.
And that's clear. So the system has been marked in a way that you can put anything into the system. And there's a checklist of my things that you need to check for to make sure that this teacher is not fraudulent. So that checklist is very key to the entire exercise. When it's back in Monrovia now, there's review, there's store review going on to make sure, because PwC will also come and review that checklist to make sure that these teachers are actually legit.
Huh. So actually, like, what we haven't asked you is, like, how big is the budget?
The budget is set at contingency and everything is about a little over $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
So when we took over, we heard that we learned that LTTP HOUC was using close to $90 million for the entire project.
And the, what was the reason for that?
Oh no, I have no idea.
So our impression is that they were using outside staff, and that was the key thing.
That's one thing I learned. And then I also learned that they intended doing some things, but I think it was not contextualized. I think it was unrealistic for me.
So that $90 million, I guess, was the budget if they did it in the entire country, not just the...
So the entire country would have been...
But from what I learned, I think they use a little over $5 million.
For the
more,
three counties.
Or more than that. Between five, it's actually between $5 and $20 million, from what I learned.
The margin of error.
But I'm not certain as it relates to the figure.
Sure, no, we'll double check. But
mm-hmm.
Clearly, this is much cheaper than what they planned for.
Yeah, our budget was carved at about little over $1 million. It's so $1,050,000.
Mm-hmm.
But we are completing the last county,
mm-hmm.
and we haven't been able to use up to $700,000, including salaries and everything.
Huh.
Wow.
PIU. So the vetting exercise alone would have taken us to about $800,000+,
mm-hmm.
including case studies and research and everything. And then the PIU salary was carved around about $150,000.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have taken us to about $950,000.
Right.
So contingency at 10% would have taken us about $1,045,000.
Okay.
So, including everything, expenditure and everything, we've gone to about $700,000+.
Yeah.
PIU salary and everything.
Hmm.
So we've been able to save more, and our culture is more driving towards saving.
Yeah.
Based on all of the controls, measures, driving, you know,
right.
Ensuring that people don't over their bills and whatever.
I mean, recognizing that you have limited information on how USAID was planning on using their money and stuff, what do you think was the difference between your budget and theirs? Why did...
One of the traditional donors in Liberia, I bought Poon to hiring people from outside.
Mm.
So cost of living adjustment for most of these people is challenging.
Yeah.
Now, so we... I'm basically trained in school outside. I might have some qualification, but if I was being hired from London to move to Liberia, you'd be paying me probably $1,000 a day.
Yeah, so apart from that, apart from the cost of living adjustment, are there any other things you can think of that would drive?
Well, I haven't worked with the international NGOs to know exactly what they're doing, their costing like. But it's sort of ridiculous in terms of the way things are from the time I've been seeing NGOs operating in Liberia. So some of the figures you tend to wonder, how do we really arrive at this weekend and come up with the actual expenditure?
Mm.
Do you think that another part of the savings or whatever came from the fact that typically there'll be a different, the money would have to pass through a lot of circuit before it gets to the ministry, before any part of it gets to the implementing part?
This is the first direct budget I think came to the ministry.
first budget.
Direct budget. And in terms of managing money, it actually depends on the control. The better the control is, the more savings you may have and the efficient management you may have. That's
why,
it.
Why do you think they choose now and they choose your team to give
No, I think this was a test case. This was a test case. So I may not be able to speak to future or the past event because I'm sure it was in test data.
And reflecting on your experience, do you think that they'll look at this test case and go, yeah, sure, now we can give them money?
Well, traditional donors might not want to do that. It's kind of challenging to do.
Why do you think they won't change their mind even after seeing all these
savings? Think the ministry was trying to see exactly whether there could be savings done, there could be efficient management done with direct budget support. The intent is to make a case.
But when you say that traditional donors maybe might not be interested, I guess Big Win is a philanthropy and that's not a traditional donor. So, you know, potentially other philanthropies might be interested based on this experience. Even if USAID is not going to change their way of working, maybe this can be evidence for philanthropies to say, look, you can trust me. So the project, when exactly is it slated to come to an end?
We're currently citing that the project might end by the close of September.
Okay.
Based on the... No, another thing I'm talking about. The teacher's writing the checklist they need. They normally use... The checklist they use for each teacher. The person who's writing, what's the check? What do they check for?
So September 2017, and it basically began June 2016.
Yeah. The first is June 2016, and then we'll end September.
I mean, are you aware of any plans for a next phase, a next step, something like that?
No, that hasn't been communicated to me.
Okay.
So until then, I might not know until the review is done.
Okay. So there will be a review.
There will be a review after September, and then license learn and everything will become up. In conjunction with what you are doing as well. So tablet that will inform a decision.
Ah, okay. So the people who are in the field, they
have the checklist.
Yeah. Do you have it in a PDF?
There was a system developed.
We're talking about the software now. I mean, what I would like to see is if we could maybe get a hold of the baseline audit, that would be...
Bitcoin should be able to send to the baseline. Or David would be better if he should send the baseline.
Okay.
The baseline audit.
Okay. So we'll ask him for both of those. Right, any final thoughts from your side or something?
Yeah, speaking to some of the challenges learned in the field, now in dealing with the budget. I mean, when the budget was carved, there were things left out. So we technically had to revisit those budget, those line items. For example, vehicle repairs and maintenance were never into the budget. Office supplies for the PIU. Operations activities, it was never in the budget. So that alone posed some challenge. But the way we work around that was, after we identify means to make savings, because the budget was set that you cannot go above.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
After we identify means, then we make a request to Big One at every given point that we need.
Right.
Okay, we need this.
So you can use the savings for something
so,
that wasn't in the budget.
What's in the budget, then when they give us an approval, we can go on. Other than that, no approval, we don't touch. So that efficient component was actually developed to ensure that there's no wastage of our donor funds. And I always borrow from the perception that these donor funds are not just free money. People work to put there because
now they mentioned it, I actually do have a few questions about your relationship with the donors.
Okay, so what happened was that we developed a direct communication line with the donors, Oscar and what have you.
Oscar,
so
yeah.
every situation is being communicated and everybody in the cycle, including the project manager and sometimes the minister, is being copied.
What was that?
And everything. So it's a kind of open communications.
Open communication. Okay.
Which one?
And
then,
that was between... So
there's a team on their side, Paige,
mm-hmm.
Oscar, and Chris. So even David, every communication is being shared among the three, everybody, to know exactly we are, to make sure that we are on the same page.
Right.
Okay. And your relationship with David as head to finance. So
it's the project manager.
Mm-hmm.
So there are times that we can have a cake every day and eat it. Sometimes this thing is not working. Okay, this can go. This can go. So, but he has been a very is somebody who believe in team work. So situations that arise, he normally calls and we sit around the table to talk about it, brainstorm and come up with ideas and see how best we get it to the elevated to the ministers and every other person is involved and make sure that we get it done.
So David was the one who connected with the minister?
He reports directly to the minister, but I also could report to the minister.
One thing we're curious about is the relationship between this office and the bigger ministry.
Mm.
And I think one thing that you mentioned was that you used to handle the per diems to the people on the field.
The way it works
mm-hmm.
is this. The request come from the team through the directors or who's the directors and then forward to the ministers.
Mm-hmm.
The assistant minister who's presides over that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So that request goes to the team. It comes from the team. It is sent to the project manager.
Mm-hmm.
He reviews it. If he has a query, he sent to me and then we discuss that. And if we can earn a certain thing, and he will not, okay. But when it is okay from him, then it comes to me. And that way we do our review. If we have a problem, go back to him back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And then the check is raised, the payment is raised,
mm-hmm.
and then we go through the controller. At that point, he doesn't have any point with it again. The controller of the ministry. Because the controller is the one that report to the Ministry of Finance
mm-hmm.
in terms of every
right.
dollar fund account.
Yeah,
transaction.
Okay.
So the controller reviews the transactions and ensure that those transactions is void or number of checks, they are in line with the request, the number of days that they go in for and everything. And then when she's okay with it, she's sent to internal audit for review.
Okay.
That's the control process that we put in. Internal audit will review, have their own query when it is okay. And then internal audit will sign and stem.
Right.
And then we take it from that level and get to the Deputy Minister for Administration
mm-hmm.
because he handles all administrative aspects. And finance and internal audit is under the Deputy Minister for Administration.
Okay.
So he will take his review, look at it, okay, when he's okay, he signs. And then the check is not still ready. So at that point, it's taken to the minister for final signature. So ministers will review as well.
Mm-hmm.
So along every given point, it's a full process, four or five process, controller, internal audit, deputy minister,
mm-hmm.
and then the minister proper.
So
it's actually six steps.
And then at the end of the process, if it's signed by the minister...
If it is signed, the check is given to...
The person.
To the person.
Yeah.
But then we photocopy your details, your ID card, your details, your work ID card,
okay.
everything is attached, the documents to it.
So essentially, the incentive for the ministry staff is that you can earn extra money if you work on this project. The HR staff.
Because you're taking them off their main duty,
yeah.
really.
Mm-hmm.
And then sending them over.
But, I mean, they still get their normal salary. But this is the top up.
Yeah, just the top up for the kind of all the headache and you're going to go into sleep in environments that you're not adjusted to.
But you said that you cover the lodging and the transport for them to actually get to the field and stay there.
Yeah, that's the money we give them. Nothing extra.
Yeah.
Nothing extra, it's just the money we give them.
Okay. So you don't get paid for like extra work.
No.
So they're responsible for arranging their lodging?
Yeah, when they get in the field.
And transport as well?
Yeah. No, transport is done by us.
Okay.
We have the vehicles and everything ready. Frequent bar food. We ensure that the project bought 4 vehicles. And we're getting a response. Because renting, we realized that renting of vehicles alone would have taken us to almost $300,000.
Yes.
Wow.
If you have rented a vehicle for $300 a day and you are using about 300 days in a year, you know that it's going to be more costly.
So how many vehicles did you
purchase? So when we saw that, we said, okay, we did a cost-benefit analysis of purchasing vehicles versus renting vehicles.
Yeah.
So we purchased about 4 vehicles.
Are these like Land Cruisers?
Yeah, Land Cruiser had type jeans for 1 Halo pickup. So it's 4 in totality.
Mm-hmm.
And then those vehicles are the ones that take these members into the field.
I see. Okay. And then they are responsible for their own food and lodging.
Their own food and lodging. They are responsible from the Pradhan, the food and lodging.
Yes, that's what I mean. Yeah.
So the Pradhan is mainly meant for food and lodging.
Mm-hmm.
It's not no extra money.
Yeah, no, sorry, thank you for clearing that up.
Thanks for clearing that up. So just going back to relationships again, one last relationship, and where it was the relationship with this office and the finance ministry. Apart from them working to get Big Win in, and once Big Win came in, and apart from like maybe regular meetings that there'll be, how much working with did you do with the bigger ministry, or did they leave you guys to handle it yourselves?
No, the bigger ministry is a direct reporting line from the minister. So the minister does briefing at every senior management meeting.
You work for the minister. That's basically what it comes down to.
No, not directly.
Not directly.
I work for... So the way the project is carved, I'm reporting to Big Win and the minister.
Okay. All right. Cool. Well, that's all from my side.
That's all from my side.
Thanks.
Thank you.